What up, everyone? Welcome to another edition of the La U Times podcast. Got my two northern friends in the house today. Dennis, what's up, bro? How you doing?
Man, I am good. As I was just saying to you guys before we clicked record, just indulged in some gooey butter cake ice cream from Bluebell. So all my people in Texas, which is like everybody who listens, if you have not tried that yet, you should. I really like it. I think it's really good, but go try it for yourself.
Bluebell does not miss. So even though I've not tried it, I am 100% sure that's going to be amazing. Edgar, how we doing, dog?
So not as good because I don't have ice cream, but that's the plan for once we're done here. Go get some ice cream.
My man. Well, fellas, quite a bit to talk about today. We're going to do something a little bit different. So whoever we catch online that's watching, what's up, everyone that's tuning in, we'll be able to put the audio pod on tomorrow on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. But we figured since we have a day until our next match against Columbus, probably a good time to get talking about both of our squads and everything surrounding them. Want to start on something very negative that happened over the weekend, obviously, in the games we had, more specifically in the Femenil game. Something tragic happened, which the health of one of our players was in jeopardy with a fractural or a facial fracture. And that wasn't even the biggest news that came out of that game, even though it should have been with, the terrible injury that Nayeli Rangel suffered, but more so the embarrassment behind the Liga Femenil and hiding behind a tweet, most, which was absolutely horrifying. And then no public statement, nothing as far as an injury report, because it was just handled very poorly. Like, it was not what the league has grown tremendously over the last 6.5 or so years to, throw it all away on an incident that could have really been significantly terrible for the player's health. So we'll start there, guys. I'm sure you guys saw it. Even if you didn't catch the game, it was all over social media yesterday and today. I avoided the video as much as I could. I'm not really good at handling terrible injuries, especially because I have a torn ACL, which I tore back in college playing soccer. So I am not good with injuries at all. But we'll start there, guys. Some thoughts, Dennis. What was the league thinking, bro?
I mean, we talked about it in a group thread earlier. Like, the anti-theatist agenda just keeps growing. It's just like what are we doing? Like, people in power, and this is not just a Mexican league thing. This is a trend that's been happening throughout all of global football. The people in charge, do they all have to have low IQs in order to like get the jobs that they're doing? And do they all have to look really dumb or act really dumb or say things really dumb? I just don't understand, man. Like, we're talking about the health of one of your players. Like, that's the most serious thing, right?
An important player, not only for Tigres, exactly, but for the league in general, with the history that she's had.
Exactly. And the fact that they just kind of like put the most minimal effort into like putting attention and care towards it. It's mind-boggling to me. And like, our players having to run out and get the stretcher out on the field, like our players having to do that during the game
is helping her load in the ambulance.
It's insane to me. Like, yeah, we literally hire medical professionals at these games for a reason. What? I just don't understand. Like, I don't have any like words beyond that, because it's just stupid. And that I know it's a simple thing to like say, oh, let's be better, but like, come on, man. Like, and even if it wasn't a Tigres player, it's like, this is just unacceptable, regardless of who it is, regardless of what team it is. Obviously, for us, it means a lot, but this is just a bad look for the league in general, and for like a feminine league that has grown and has gotten better recently. We have a big year coming up with the NWSL the Summer Cup and all the stuff we're going to be doing with CONCACAF later on, this is a bad look ahead of that. So come on, man.
No doubt. Edgar, what do you think about the tweet specifically and how the league was able to hide through that, even lying in some of the statements that were made on that tweet?
So it's just really, really upsetting and really unfortunate that this was even published. So I'm going to go ahead and read it for the listeners in case you guys didn't, don't know what we're talking about. So it's in Liga MX Femenil, our priority is the integrity of the players. Therefore, after the collision between Dulce Martinez and Ayeli Rangel, we followed the medical care and shock protocol, which lasted less than 8 minutes before being transferred. Know the minute by minute. And it's a graphic of detailed descriptions of what happened between the 48th minute and the 56th minute. Now, let's be honest, this should not have lasted more than 2 minutes. She should have been off of the field within 2 minutes. There's no excuse for it whatsoever. And now it doesn't matter if it's the women's league, the men's league, the second division, the youth teams, no professional athlete should be on the field and be not cared for in that way. It's just ridiculous and it's embarrassing that they dare to try to justify some sort of professionalism between some BS protocol.
And I think for me also, like, to add on to all that was the fact that the last part of that tweet, it was like a proud moment for them that it took 7 minutes, that it came, that it was handled in a very efficient and easy way as far as what the protocol might dictate in that situation. So especially after, you know, the concussion doctor was involved. But, you know, like Dennis mentioned, like the players running onto the field with the stretcher and then also, you know, going towards the ambulance, helping in the loading there. It just shows very poor professionalism on the league. The stadium personnel, the Puebla team, as far as logistics that possibly could have been screwed up there. So I think that ultimately, like we both all have mentioned, terrible look on the league. And we should be talking more about the 6-0 victory and the continuing dominance of this squad. And then obviously talking about the player and her, you know, her health, you know, wishing her a speedy recovery through this time. But here we are talking more about a more pathetic incident and how the player was not helped properly as a professional and as a player that, who has, like as mentioned, been such an important player to the league in its history and the national team whenever she first made her debut. She was long ago young. So just terrible look, terrible look. But a little bit more about that game, though. Obviously, you know, moving on to more of a positive note. And like I said, we wish Nayeli Rangel a speedy recovery through this. But the team did pull off a 6-0 victory, which was it allows the team to continue undefeated in the league as we get closer to closing out the season. My first question, guys, is – I know I've asked it before, who's going to stop them? And there's anybody that can actually stop them. You know, obviously the toughest game this year was the Rayados and Chivas game, which we had back to back. And that's obviously understandable with the type of teams that they both have, but it just seems like the team is continuing to do well, especially with the new additions on the team, Jenny Hermoso scoring again, finding more of her groove with this team. And obviously all the other players who we see week in, week out, and obviously season after season, helping Tigres Femenil be a dominant team. Who's going to challenge them, Edgar?
So I mentioned this, if it wasn't last pod, it was maybe two pods ago. Club America is the only one who keeps trying to say that they will and say that they are the team to beat this season. One of their players actually came out and said that, and they were immediately dragged on Twitter. Rightfully so, though, because this is not their most competitive team, and we've said that before. And yeah, we know there's a big rivalry there, both on the men's and women's side, but I mean, unless this our team goes out unfocused, which is highly improbable, I don't think anyone can stop them.
What about you, Dennis? What do you think?
I don't think stop is the right word, because I don't think we can be stopped. I think it's who's going to be able to contain us the most. And to me, there's only two teams, and it's the same two teams as last year. It's America, and only because of rivalry purposes, it's America. Like, I know Chivas has had a good year this year, but I don't know. I just feel like we have so many options that we can go to where we can figure stuff out as we need to. I don't see us really, you know, faltering too much because we have different ways we can beat teams. Like we can play more centrally between Alisson and Jenny and Stephanie. We can beat you out on the wing with Ovalle on the fourth that she's been on, especially with Dembe's speed. We can control the midfield. We have players who want to control the midfield, a la Mari Carmen. And we have the best defense in the league. And that alone just makes it really, really hard to beat us, especially with how Ferral and Greta have played the whole season, both for club and for country. I mean, they've just been outstanding the whole season since January. So that alone makes it really difficult as it is. And the offensive options are plentiful, to say the least.
And I love that you mentioned the different styles and ways that they can play. And we've seen it, you know, depending on the rival. Just thinking about the two toughest games that we had, which we tied against Monterrey and then beat Chivas. They were tough games, especially, you know, with the type of pace that Chivas likes to play, more up-tempo. Rayadas, I think, was able to, you know, keeping on track with the word that you use, contain the Amazonas for periods of the game, which was, you know, a tie at the end. So I think that ultimately for me is the management that has happened this year between Mila Martinez and the coaching staff with the players and using more rotations this year than last season when she made her debut, even winning a championship while she was highly criticized. I think that it just leaves a lot of positive as we continue to move forward into the Liguilla as they finish out the season, that they are the team to beat, obviously, and they are also the favorites amongst all types of categories to take the, you know, the campeonato once again. So we'll see, obviously. Nothing's written. Game is a game, so anything can happen in soccer. So, but yeah. Looking quite well for the Amazonas.
I would agree. Before we keep going, I do want to say for all you people watching live, again, thanks for being here. There is comments that you can make if you're watching on Twitter, which I think is the only place we're even streaming. So if you have a comment, leave it. We'll look at it. Maybe we'll talk about what you might have. Keep it brief, obviously, please. But we can see them. So if you have something to say, let us know. Move on.
Well, moving on to the men's side. Obviously, coming off of a victory. Coincidentally, both teams played Puebla on the road, and we came back with victories. 3-2 on the men's side, where we were able to watch Tigres come back after the FIFA break. And we talked about the form and the different lineups going into the previous pods as we were approaching this game. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I continuously mentioned was the lineup that, you know, I wanted a strong lineup, a lineup that was going to be, you know, something that we made look like we're going to close out the year with. And it seems like that's a probable lineup. Obviously, Samir coming back for Diego Reyes, who got the start. But what are your thoughts, fellas? 3-2 victory in Puebla. Start with you, Dennis. Lineup, what'd you think about it? And overall impressions from the squad?
Yeah, so the one obvious, well, I guess there's two like kind of mad decisions about the lineup initially that I had when it came out on Friday. And that was Quiñones, obviously, even though that made sense within the context of who was even available to some degree, but Reyes being the one where it's like, okay, see what happens. I mean, rotation is important. I get it. It's important to keep Samir as best as possible going into Champions League this week. So I understood it from that angle, but we've seen Reyes since last year not be at his best, since he's kind of dipped back into his normal form. But I don't know, something about him being married makes a little bit of a difference, because even though he didn't defend super well, I mean, he got a goal, which is, I mean, the fact that he even scored is just absolutely hilarious to me. It wasn't even that great of a header, to be honest, and he still managed to get it in. But I was very pleased with Bruneta, very pleased with Bruneta, very pleased with Lainez and Aquino. I thought those guys were the standout, and Carioca, obviously. I think Carioca speaks for itself most weeks. But those other three I thought were superb. Puebla made it interesting because of the goals that they scored, like two really quality goals. That it's like, you just got to throw your hands up and be like, oh, there's nothing you can do about that. Right. So, yeah, we dominated them. Like, we had so many shots, like for a while we didn't have the XG to like show that, but we had a lot of shots. I mean, they did too, but first half, nothing was just going in, and finally the breakthrough happened later on. And especially when Sebastian came in the game, that really opened things up a lot. From a substitutes perspective, but from that starting lineup, Lainez, Bruneta, Aquino were great, and then Sebastian ended up being the best player on the field despite him only playing 25 minutes.
25 plus stoppage for sure. Edgar, we talk about some players that stood out. Bruneta obviously getting on the scoreboard, Cordoba coming off the bench scoring another goal. Thoughts on that, on those two players specifically scoring, and your overall impressions from the game?
So I think we did really well. I know I was predicting more of a 3-0, 3-1, but honestly, Puebla's goals were a little bit defensive mistakes, but also, I don't know if we discussed it during the week last week. They apparently came out, had a press conference, apologized to their fans, threatened to beat us, which is like, all right. I mean, I didn't really feel threatened. It humored me, but they played better than the rest of the season. And I mean, we talk about that a lot. Every team wants to play at 110 against Tigres, which, I mean, I guess that only makes us better. But overall, I was very happy with the team.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I was checking out the stats behind, you know, the players individually, and Carioca, man, his heat map on the field was incredible. He had a great game. Bruneta, really interesting to me how on his map he shifts a lot on the left flank, and Nando, who you'd think would be somewhere a lot more centrally, was out wide on right, or closer to the right side from the central aspect of the field. So I thought that was interesting how, you know, how they seem to tuck in or favorite one side over the other. But Bruneta was great again. I know that there's been some doubts about him and his form with the team, but the stats say otherwise as far as some goals and assists. Cordoba stats obviously incredible off the bench with some starts there during the season, but overall pretty great victory as we get closer to the end of the season on the men's side as well, sitting in fourth place at the moment with 24 points. And obviously we have a big game against Pachuca, but more importantly, it's great to go with a victory as we continue to fight in the CONCACAF against the MLS reigning champion Columbus Crew. Dennis, you were watching the game this weekend. We want your thoughts and scouting report on what you saw in the most recent game against Columbus, or for Columbus.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by this team, man. They, much like our femenil team, can play different ways. They use their guys in so many different ways. I know we talked about it some last week with Cucho, with Rossi, with Nagby. One guy that I didn't really talk about last week, who I really want to talk about right now, is Aiden Morris, who's like the midfielder who plays next to Nagby. I would argue he's probably the best counter-presser in MLS, the way that he immediately fights back for balls. He is a dual-winning machine. They played Nashville over the weekend, and just the constant amount of times he won the ball back for his team throughout the entire game really impressed me. And I know this is a phrase that we've said a lot, that people say a lot when it comes to footy, but the midfield is the most important thing. Like, that's just how it is, right? Especially this first leg with us not having Carioca, and with them, which I expect them to have a very strong lineup tomorrow, with Morris and Nagby, who complement each other really well, who control the tempo. Nagby's kind of like their Guido in some ways, like the Calma sort of guy. And Aiden is a lot like Gorriarán, but I think he does a lot more of the dirty work than Gorriarán does, in my opinion. And that's a guy that is really going to dictate how things go, especially if he wins duels against our midfield, if he's able to win the ball back as well as he did on Saturday. Another guy that we need to think about as well is Yeboah, who is one of their wingers. I think he plays out on the left wing. He scored in the MLS Cup final. He's stupid fast. They had him tuck in a lot throughout the game on Saturday, but also had him really go out towards the sideline, and that kind of confused Nashville a little bit. And he had a great assist on their second goal and the equalizer. They just have so many quality guys who they can rotate around, and they remind me a lot of Manchester City in the sense of how they shift their guys around so much. We do this too, but like City, they'll have, you know, the phases of the game, for example, where John Stones comes in next to Rodri, and then Manuel Akanji steps in next to Rodri, or Kyle Walker, you know, like they'll rotate all those like defenders, even drop like Foden back, even drop De Bruyne back or more forward to kind of just constantly confuse the other team. Columbus is like the MLS equivalent of that, where they have guys who will go in and out in different spots. I saw their right back be in really interesting positions throughout that game on Saturday. Like I mentioned, Yeboah was kind of in and out. Rossi, also very different as well. Rossi is a guy who I was listening to some Columbus pods today just to kind of see how they think about us and how they think about their team right now. And I guess Rossi's not going through a great stretch right now. Like, they don't rate him really highly, and that he's not living up to his like DP like tag that he has, because he is one of the three designated players. So be curious to see if that continues, or if he, you know, like most every team does against us, decides to turn up and, you know, score a goal and, you know, make us mad, but make the Columbus fans happy. But there's a lot with them that I think is really fascinating. And again, I think this is really hard for us. It's hard for both teams, because I think we do things that they don't see on a week-to-week basis in MLS that's going to throw them off as well, especially when we get to the second leg next week. So I'm really fascinated by this. I'm really looking forward to it. But again, it's all about the midfield, especially tomorrow.
And also the possibility of them being without their best player, Cucho Hernandez.
Which that's super interesting.
Yeah. There's nothing really specific about his absence from the game this past weekend.
Let me speak to that. So apparently in one of their most recent league games, he threw a fit and like threw a cooler and did stuff on the bench, like kind of just had like an outrage moment. And that Nashville game didn't officially serve as a suspension, because Wilfred Nancy, their coach, like intentionally was very vague about all of that. Like, he has been very like non-committal about saying this, we're disciplining him or whatever, but it definitely felt that way. And he did not say that he's going to be available tomorrow, like concrete. So there's a chance he may be around. There's a chance he may not. I would be shocked if he isn't, just because I do think they want to put a priority on this right now, on this tournament, because, you know, the MLS, there's still a lot of games left to go in that season. But for them to have the chance to, you know, progress in this tournament, they need all their guys. And so Cucho is their most important offensive player. I wouldn't say they're nothing without him, because they have so many other guys, but he is really the key cog as far as like goal scoring goes. and he makes everybody better. He makes Rossi better. He makes Yeboah better. Russell Rowe better. So we'll see if he shows up tomorrow, because if he doesn't, then that only helps us a lot, right? But I don't know. We got to know what's going on, too. Like, it feels a little too vague, and I think at some point all of us have to know what's the real reason. Like, why is he being disciplined? What's going on? So
he reminds me of a Liga MX player who also played in the MLS with the Sounders. Raul Ruiz Diaz on steroids. Raul Ruiz Diaz was a speedy guy, but he was a poacher. He scored goals in the box. Like I mentioned, you know, a couple pods ago, he was able to, or Cucho Hernandez is able to go out wide, handle the ball, you know, move it around in that creative aspect. So Raul Ruiz Diaz on steroids. I think that's a good comparison for some of the people who follow the Liga MX, and more specifically him, his time in Morelia, and then with the Seattle Sounders, which he had a really pretty successful career. So it'll be interesting to see if he plays. If he doesn't play, obviously that favors us a little bit, because he's a one less threat that we have to deal with, especially with the defensive questions that we tend to have game to game at times. So let's talk a little bit about the lineup, guys. Thank you, Dennis, for providing that scouting report on the Columbus Crew.
Somebody hire me to be a scout. I'll do it for free for like a month.
And anybody else that's also tuning in, if you have any thoughts about Columbus, something that we might have missed, feel free to comment on the comment box. And we move on to the lineup, guys. What do we think about this lineup? We know Nico Ibáñez is hurt. He's not going to play. He started against Puebla, which we naturally knew that probably Gignac was going to be starting in Columbus. So now the question is, who starts besides Gignac? And then does Samir come back into the starting lineup for Diego Reyes, especially with the no foreign rule in CONCACAF on the field, or the limit on the field? What are some thoughts that we have as we're getting ready for this game tomorrow as far as the starting lineup that Siboldi might bring out?
Edgar, go, because I just yapped for 5 minutes.
Yeah, so it's really unfortunate that Nico Ibáñez is going to be unavailable, but thankfully we do have André Pierre back at 100%, ready to go. But I do think Samir also does come back to the starting lineup. I think he was being rested for this game specifically, and we know that Reyes actually did get the start because Purata wasn't at 100% either, so that explained the combination in the back. If Pizarro's at 100, I think he's going to start. Obviously, if needed be, I do think Purata will get subbed in. Hopefully we don't see too much of Reyes, unless he wants to score another header.
But you know what I'm curious to see? I want the fake news Jimmy Lozano depth chart from Siboldi. to see who he actually ranks higher between Purata and Diego Reyes. I know Purata got some starts, and I know people have, you know, been content with his performances. I don't think he's neither it, but I do think he's probably better than Reyes in my eyes. But, you know, I want to know what Siboldi's, you know, fake news depth chart is as far as Tigres goes. Any other changes besides the ones that you mentioned, Edgar, that could possibly happen? Do we see Luis Quiñones starting out wide back-to-back appearances?
Probably, and I hate to admit it, as much as I would prefer the BCG up top, it's probably not going to happen. We're going to see Quiñones, maybe Linus again as well.
So repeating wingers.
Yeah, Dennis? With Linus out, that kind of would force Osiel to be the substitute for Gignac.
True, so that rules him out as a starter. Good point.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of feels like we're getting the same, almost the same front four as we did on Friday, with obviously André taking over for Nico. Although I would like to see Sebastian, Bruneta, Linus under Gignac. I'm curious to see if Huerta's available and like to be fit, and this might be a crazy thing to say, but I wonder in the back of Siboldi's mind if he needs to at some point shift Pizarro back up to the midfield, only because Carioca's not playing tomorrow.
Right.
This is like the only scenario in which that would happen. I don't know if he starts there, but I would not be surprised if he finishes there next to Gorriarán, which Gorriarán is locked in, but who is going to pair next to him is the bigger question in all this. To me, I would do Fierro, even though I think experience is super important for tomorrow, especially for controlling the game and kind of seeing the game out and making sure it doesn't turn into a high-tempo experience that would not benefit us, because Columbus is very good in transition as well. I forgot to mention that a few minutes ago. That does not suit us. And we've seen how transition hurts us, especially with our with how our midfield can get easily blown by. So I'm really curious about that. I don't know. It's probably going to be Vigón, even though I don't like the fit next to Gorriarán personally. I think Vigón's better. Or not Vigón. Fierro's better, but it's probably going to be Vigón and Gorriarán in the defensive midfield.
I really hope it's Fierro, though. Now that he's had some time to come back from the national team duty that he had at the U23 level, where he saw action. Obviously, there was some, again, could have been fake news as well about some injuries in regards to him, besides the Marcelo Flores report. I would really like to see him start, just because I think he's gained so much confidence in his last two seasons at Tigres, where he's gotten a lot more playing time. And I think the day-to-day practice of obviously playing with those type of midfielders and leaders, I think definitely could be something that he's finally put on the spot to display, which he's had, you know, the chances in the past before. But I think in an important game like this, where he's probably the second option at the true defensive mid option behind Carioca, I think he gets the nod. And I think it also allows you to have the backup options of Vigón for Nando, if Nando's not doing well. And then, like you mentioned, Pizarro maybe sliding into that position with another center back coming in, depending on what Columbus presents. And then obviously, you know, we talked about, like Edgar brought up, Osiel being the backup to Gignac. So I think strategically it makes more sense for Fierro to get the start, with Vigón being the option in the middle, and then just allows the flow of the game to be a lot more in line with how it would normally be if Carioca was to start as well, with the type of player selections.
The other thing that I could see happening, which I also wouldn't mind this, Flores, Córdoba, Lainez under Gignac. I think that works really well, especially with how Marcelo played last CONCACAF round.
I mean, yeah, I would like him to start as well over Quiñones, but, you know, again, going back to the reports about the injuries, and then he didn't start against Puebla. Maybe now he's had the time to recover, so I would love for him to start at the winger, but I think we get closer to the repeat of what we saw on Friday against Puebla, with the exception of possibly Córdoba being inserted in there for Bruneta. Going back to the player rotations, any last thoughts on possible lineups there?
Nope.
Okay. We'll move on to some quick predictions. What are we thinking? Big game.
1-0 if we play well, 2-0 if we get lucky.
I love your reasoning.
1-1 if Cucho does not play. If Cucho Hernandez does play, 2-2.
Okay, I'm going 1-0 victory by Tigres. I think we bring the positive result and we continue to have good momentum throughout the month of March, moving into April.
Just got to get goals.
Yeah, and one goal. That's all we need. Bring back one goal. Yep. Yeah, and I think closing out the game at home at our pace and with our crowd will completely favor us. But the scoring the goal in Columbus is important. So, and, you know, historically, Mexican teams, more specifically L3, struggles in Columbus, Ohio, as a place that doesn't do well for Mexicans. So hopefully Tigres changes that as we play in CONCACAF tomorrow against Columbus. Early kickoff, if I'm not mistaken, we play at 6 o'clock Central Time.
Correct. And it is on FS1 if you don't want to hear the horrible TUDN broadcast.
True that, true that. Good looking out. Good looking out there. But yeah, I think we're going to have the positive result, fellas. I'm confident.
I hope so.
Lastly, guys, just wanted to end some conclude this pod/live streaming that we had on X. Few things that I wanted to point out, you know, were the from the vault I came across today, and I want to start that in our pods episodes. Something that I came across a video 24 years ago, exactly the day Tigres played Morelia in a tie that ended 3-3 with Victor Manuel Bucetich coaching Tigres facing Tomas Boy, who coached Morelia. And if you are Tigres fans since then, or you before or whenever, but if you recall the players that I mentioned or the coaches that I mentioned on that Tigres squad, was a very offensive-minded team. And, you know, if Lou hears this, he'll definitely back me up on this. Diablo Nunez scored a goal to tie the game after, you know, being down to Morelia 3-2. But Matador Hernandez scored a penalty kick for us to start the first goal of three. And then he had a bicycle kick off of a Diablo Nunez cross. And, man, that was around the time where I really got into Tigres. So when I came across it today, just remember the spectacular team that we had. Fabián El Ruso Peña was on that team. I think Ramón Ramírez at that point was on. No, not Ramón Ramírez. No, not that with that squad. Mauro Caballero, a guy, a Paraguayan striker that came off the bench who was really good and scored some goals. Javier Saavedra was on that squad. Think it is right back legend / right mid, but really cool coming across that, especially seeing Diablo Nunez and Luis Hernandez perform in those games. But yeah, I don't know if you guys came across it, but if you guys came across it who were watching it, pretty neat video to see some of the old videos from Tigres come across. Something yeah. else. What's that?
No, I'm saying absolutely. And it would actually be really nice to go back through memory lane on our pods.
Yeah, I think it'd be cool, especially with the more recent fan base that we've acquired over the last, 10, 15 years as the brand continued to grow. So, yeah, I thought it was cool. Another thing that I wanted to, touch up on, and it kind of goes hand in hand, Tigres hosted a watch party for the Olympic Le Classique. I'm not French, so excuse me there. Le Classique. Olympic Marseille versus PSG. That was pretty cool to kind of get some sort of partnership to continue to develop, more specifically on the League One side, not so much the Marseille side, but
League One, Uber Eats, which will be League McDonald's next year, if you didn't know, which is the best. It's the best name ever. Also, it's not PSG, it's MSG, Mbappe SG. Come on now.
Let me see what you did there.
For like two more months.
So yeah, pretty cool. And then, just wanted to mention that. Shout out Tigres for continuing to the exposure of the brand, especially international, taking advantage of the situation, the fact that Gignac played at Marseille. So pretty cool there. Gignac was at the stadium with some fans. Obviously, it was an open watch party. So not sure exactly how many people went, but came across it on multiple social media sites. Lastly, Gignac was interviewed today, and some interesting things came out of that interview. Wishing Rayados beats Inter or Messi FC in the CONCACAF. So especially, you know, he mentions that knowing that we're going to play him in the League's Cup. But it'd be interesting if we have the Clásico Regio in the Conca in the semifinals. And then also he talked about the rivalry with Club America. I'm not sure you guys saw that today as well.
That's interesting that he says that he wants to play Rayados instead of Miami when there's a chance he might not even play in August against Miami because of the surgery that he's going to have in France over the summer. That's kind of odd to me. I mean, I get it because you want to avenge the last time a Clásico Regio was played in CONCACAF, which was that stupid final, but I don't know. That's interesting to me. I'm this is the first time I'm hearing about this, so you're enlightening me. I don't know, though.
I think, and I could be wrong, he already played Messi, so he might not care. He might not be phased.
That's true. Surely he has some time down the road.
If I recall correctly, there was maybe two games where he's already played them.
In France, probably in a Champions League sort of thing.
Or it would have to be a Champions League game.
Or international.
Yeah, or international. I think one might have been international. Mm-hmm. One was Champions, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
Or we can keep the conspiracy going that he's not going to have surgery like he said he would, and he's going to continue to play.
I mean, that'd be great, because who knows how long he's going to recover from that surgery. I feel like it's going to be a little bit. So.
Absolutely.
And we need him.
Yeah, a healthy Gignac means good things for Tigres. Anything else, fellas, before we part ways?
Speaking of other CONCACAF ties, who wins each of the other three quarterfinals?
I'm going Monterrey. I'm going America. And obviously us.
Is Pachuca the other one?
Yeah, Pachuca and Herediano is the other one, which they're kind of a surprise team.
Is it? I thought America was playing Pachuca.
No, America's playing New England, who has 1 point, 1 point in MLS.
That's right.
But they've been cracked in CCC. So I don't know.
Obviously, still a long ways to go. But do we foresee if everything goes in our favor, America versus Tigres in the final?
Yep. I called it.
And it's probably going to be at Azteca, too.
No, they can't play at Azteca. It's busy failing World Cup inspections.
That's true. But it'll still probably be in Mexico City because CONCACAF is corrupt like that.
Oh, yeah. It'll be at the Cruz Azul Stadium.
Yeah, for sure.
El Estadio de los Deportes or something like that.
That's got to be the worst stadium to have a CONCACAF final at.
That's not even theirs.
It's not even theirs, exactly.
Wasn't that also supposed to be remodeled?
I don't know, dude. Some shady stuff goes down in Mexico City.
I mean, I don't know. I remember hearing Cruz Azul goes back to the Azteca because they're going to tear that down and remodel it. Then all of a sudden, both teams are going to get kicked out of the Azteca and they're going to remodel that instead.
Who the heck knows? I'm telling you, man, the people in charge have low IQs and they don't know what they're doing.
Terrible. Well, that's going to do it for today. Hope you guys enjoyed this live stream. We got up to 90 people. Shout out everybody watching.
Yeah, heck yeah. That's awesome.
Thank you for taking the time to watch us. Depending on...
Shout out Tigre Místico from San Nico.
That's right.
Saludos.
And one more shout out real quick to our youth teams who won the Dallas Cup.
That's right.
Was that U19? U17?
U17 for women, I believe. U17 for men, boys. I recall correctly.
I can't believe, you know, I mentioned it on the earlier pods when we first started recording. Tigres and Dallas used to have this partnership, and it used to be called the Rio Grande Plate.
Yes, I went to one of those games.
Same.
And I got to see Lucas Lobos. And it was great.
And so they had this partnership. And now Dallas, you know, maybe not as much recently, but when I think it was Lucho Martinez, who's a coach somewhere else now, was the coach of the FC Dallas team a few years ago. But before that, he was the development youth coach. And so he developed all these players, like Weston McKinney's from there. Dallas just has, more specifically Frisco, because of like the way that Frisco's set up. It has so many, I've never seen so many soccer fields in my life until I went up to Frisco. And soccer is just like the hot sport there. So they produce a lot of talent. So Tigres, Club English account, if you're watching this, or somebody that runs that account, or somebody that knows that runs that account, get that partnership back. We could get so much talent from them as a youth, as we can get youth players from over there who are Mexican-American, bring them over, make them try out, and possibly even, you know, end this stupid narrative that we, you know, don't help the national team and it's always our fault that they get their asses kicked. You know what I mean? We can produce some Mexican-Americans and provide them to the national team and be done with this narrative and say Tigres produces Dallas FC Academy players and lets them play.
Well, and also it would help in the neglection that Edgar and I feel as fellow DFW people, that we feel neglected by the team because everything seems to either happen in Houston or Austin, which makes sense. But like, I mean, hello, we're up here too. We haven't had anything since that friendly in 2022.
Bro, which was hot. I mean,
so hot.
Houston, Pasadena got a shout out in a 2DN by Aldo Farias. So I think they didn't call the suburb out in Dallas or the Dallas Fort Worth area. They called out a suburb here in the H, Pasadena, Nuevo León, baby.
It's crazy.
Well, Arlington has Tigres fans. I know a couple of them. I'm one of them.
So does Fort Worth has fans.
Bro, you just need to run up that Double Nation account so that you become an influencer and they bring the team out there to you.
Yeah, or they send me to France. I can go watch the classic. One of those.
The true McDonald's that, League.
That. Yeah. So, Tigres, please remember, you have fans in the U.S. You have fans in Dallas. We speak English. We also want to spread the
word. And Spanish, bro.
And Spanish, of course, yeah.
And maybe French.
Sometimes.
Couple words.
Well, yeah. That'll do it for us today or tonight. We'll see you again this week as we talk about our possible victory tomorrow. Hopefully we bring it back. Thanks everybody. Thanks for tuning in.
Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Apple, Spotify. Do it right now.